One proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported JAZZ 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 13th of June, Anno Domini 2009, and you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And we are on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Give us a call. If you're in the 585 area code, it's 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, if you're outside the 585 area code, it's toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. And you can find those numbers both on jazz901.org and soundbites.org. That's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. You can also join us if you go to our website at soundbites.org. You can, I seem to be disconnected. I don't know why, but you can join us at on the IRC host. We're probably blocked from IRC. And you can join us on the IRC host. And if you want to, you can even tweet to us at sound_bites for those of you who are on Twitter. I don't know what kind of question you can ask in 140 characters.
Yes.
But we found the bell and we're all good. We're all good to go.
Got the bell.
All right, let's start with news. This one's kind of semi-fascinating. You're on?
No, it's a blacklisted proxy.
Oh, all right. Microsoft is preparing to launch a public beta of Morrow, M-O-R-R-O, the free anti-malware it announced last November. Morrow will use the same scanning engine as the wildly unsuccessful Windows Live OneCare, which was Microsoft's first consumer-grade antivirus package, which Morrow replaces. OneCare is to get the boot June 30th when Microsoft stops selling the program. According to a Microsoft spokes individual, Morrow is being tested internally at the company and will be posted as a public beta, and I quote, soon. They only have till June 30th, so they better be soon. Microsoft has been mum about Morrow since November 2008 when it announced that it was dumping OneCare and would instead give away streamlined software that would sniff out PC viruses, worms, trojans, rootkits, and spyware. At the time, A.B. Barzdukas, a senior director of product management at Microsoft, only promised that Morrow would launch sometime in the second half of this year. She also denied claims by security software rivals that Microsoft had thrown in the towel on OneCare because the software had flopped. Microsoft's other consumer security software, the anti-spyware Windows Defender program, is bundled with Vista, will be included in Windows 7, and is a free download for Windows XP users. Last year, John Pescatore, or possibly Pescatore being Italian, an analyst at Gartner Inc. questioned whether users would step up to Microsoft's Morrow even if it was free. Consumers are hesitant to pay for a Microsoft security product that will remove problems in other Microsoft products, he said. Think of it this way. What if you smelled a rotten egg odor in your water and the water company said, sure, we can remove that, but it will cost you $50. Would you buy it? Not surprisingly, competitors have dismissed Morrow's threat to their business and downplayed its ability to attract customers.
You start an air freshener business.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So this week's question, if you go to soundbites.org, that's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, you will find our poll of the week. The question is, will you use Microsoft's antivirus? And the choices are, I just can't wait. I'm perfectly happy with my current antivirus product, thanks. And you're joking, right? So far, we have 44 people who have voted, and shockingly, you're joking, right, is winning by about a little over two-thirds of the people think it's a joke.
It's right on up there with their faxing software.
Exactly. Now, listen, you people, I know you people, and just punching a button is not enough for you. So when you are done voting in the poll, the next thing you need to do is, in the little yellow box, click on Give Us Your Opinion. It will take you to my website, AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
There you go. That's the cue. I could use more volume in this thing. And you can then leave your opinion while you're there. Take a look around, see what I do. On my website, I do a newsletter, and it's I have fun with it. I don't really care about anybody else. All right. That's
Tell us how you really feel.
That's how that works. I got to be honest. I'm quasi punch drunk. I've given a couple of talks this week, and well, no, but last night I was up late. I was on Facebook.
We pulled a Dave.
Not quite a Dave. There was the time that Dave had been on dial up, and I got him on Roadrunner. DSL.
This is when we first got onto the web.
Oh, that's right. When we first got onto the web, and you were still on dial up, I think.
Yep.
And he wanted to get on, and he had never really, you know, been on a lot. And
we were still using the old Fido system.
That's right. This was the first chance he had to be on the World Wide Web. We installed Mozilla, and we got him on up and running. And he was just—he forgot I was there. He was hunched over his machine, staring at this whole world of information that had opened up to him. And I kept going, Dave, time—it's like 11 o'clock, Dave. I gotta leave. I gotta go. Yeah, and he's going, yeah. He's not even looking at me. No, get out. So I said, look, Dave, do you want me to call you when I get home or what? No, I'll go to bed. Mm-hmm. You sure, Dave? Because I'll be up till about midnight. I can give you a call. No, I'm good to go. I'm good. I'm fine. Okay. So I go to bed, 6:30 in the morning, 6 o'clock in the morning. I get a phone call. Phone rings. I stumble up. I don't know what's going on. 6 o'clock in the morning is never a good time. I pick up the phone. Hello? I hear. And I thought, I said, Dave, been up all night, have we? Yes, I have. And I just got my wake-up call, and I'm still up.
Yeah, I answered my wake-up call.
So I was up last night on waiting for Facebook because at 12:01. Wow. At 12:01, I got my vanity name. So you can find me at facebook.com/nick.francesco. People were out there getting their names for Facebook. Mm-hmm. And I do social media. It's one of the things I do now.
Yeah.
And that's what actually made me tired this week, because I gave several talks on social media to various companies.
Sweet.
To monetize their web presence, as Emily Carpenter says, and to figure out how to leverage all this Twitter, Facebook, blogging stuff into sales.
Do you have the story about the Twitpocalypse?
Yeah, the Twitpocalypse.
The Twitter Twitterpocalypse.
Yeah,
Leo. It's the Twitterpocalypse.
Yeah. At any rate, that's that stuff. But I think it's past time we went to the phones, and our first caller is Paul from Rochester, New York. Hi, Paul. What's your question?
Hi. Oh, first, welcome back to Commercial Free Radio. Now, I'm a long-time
listener. Thank you. We're delighted to be here.
Yes.
Okay, I'm calling on behalf of a friend who...
Yeah. Nobody ever has a problem. It's always a friend.
Okay, never make me say it. I don't have a problem because I run Linux.
Oh, all right. You win. Okay.
And so this is kind of related to that. A person was just graduated from RIT, and she has a job, and she's going to be using Linux. And she currently has a laptop with Vista on it. And so I'd like to get it so it can dual boot. Can you repartition Vista?
What version of Linux are you planning to put on it?
A Red Hat version, CentOS.
CentOS, I believe, partitions automatically. When you boot the CD, one of the first questions it asks you is, oh, I see there's already some, basically, obviously this is not the exact wordage, but it basically says, oh, I see you've already got a something on this hard drive.
Yep.
Do you want to wipe it out or do you want to share? You know, do you want to dual boot? And so you say, I want to dual boot. And it says, okay, how much of the disk do you want for each? And it suggests about 50-50. And you do what you want, hit the button. And what it will do is dual boot, is partition the drive for you, set up both of the systems, and set up a boot manager. And then when you go into the boot manager, you'll have, I believe on CentOS it's 7 seconds, but don't quote me on it. Oh, 30 seconds. Wait, I think it's 30 seconds, but don't quote me on that. Where you get to pick off the list, right, whichever one you want. And then you hit enter and you boot into that, and you're up and running, so you can do whichever you prefer. The alternate thing that you could do is there's a version of Wubi, W-U-B-I. Wubi actually is an Ubuntu version, and it lives on your hard drive as a single file. And you double-click it, and you're in Ubuntu. And it lives on your Windows machine.
Okay, I just want to make sure that I understand. It's just that the way I've always done it before was I would take, you know, a new hard drive and partition it and then install everything.
You can certainly do that.
Yeah.
But the new installers do that for you.
I was afraid that Vista wouldn't allow me to, and I didn't know you could safely take a disk with one partition and then break it into multiple partitions and have...
Oh, yeah, everybody, people do it all the time.
Well, yeah, but you lose all the data that's on that disk.
No,
when
you don't.
When you partition.
No, you don't.
You can live partition?
Yeah.
Without partition magic now?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Essentially, partition magic is built into the installers.
Nice.
Well, read the... See, I don't use CentOS often, so I could be confused. That's happened to me in the past. So my suggestion is you read the screens very carefully, but I'll almost
so hopefully if it's
going to
erase your hard drive, it'll warn you.
It'll tell you first, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But I've done that. I've done it with Ubuntu half a dozen times.
Oh, and if I want to go a more conservative way, can I... I don't want to do anything illegal as far as making legal copies, but can I technically and legally buy a new bigger hard drive and, I guess, clone the Windows version to it? First do my partitioning.
Yeah.
Partitioning it and then clone... the Vista to the first partition.
Yes, but you will then have to call there. Microsoft and prove you own the thing because it won't. It requires reactivation.
Okay.
Yeah, it'll think you're trying to steal it. Yeah. You have to convince Microsoft.
Well,
or not.
If you put it in the same hard drive and it's going in the same machine, it won't ask you any questions.
No, a new hard drive, right? A new bigger hard drive is going to change the secret identifier that Microsoft
right.
uses.
Right.
Yes, but if it's the exact same hard drive size hard drive. That it doesn't have an issue with.
No. And what software do I use to make the clone?
I use Ghost, Norton's Ghost. It's fantastic for making an exact copy. And you can get Ghost now on the internet. You can buy it for like $30-$40. Yeah.
One thing you might want to look at that might be easier yet is just get a second hard drive for the second OS, and then it's much easier just to boot one hard drive or the
laptop,
other.
Though, so I'm not sure about the space.
Oh, it's a laptop.
Yeah,
it's hard to put second hard drives in most laptops.
Although, wait a minute. What if you were to... will Linux allow him to, if he got a USB drive?
Boot off USB. USB is really slow to boot from, though.
Well, it
depends on the machine you're on.
Yeah.
Linux, by the way, will be the first operating system to have USB 3.0 drivers.
Yeah, I read that. Kind of neat.
Are we
but
surprised?
Yeah, you can do it any one of those ways, Paul.
Okay. Thank you very much, Tom.
Sure. I don't know why you would want to do it the hard way, but you can.
Well, it depends on, for you, mucking in terminal is fun. For average folks, plugging in a second hard drive is the easy way.
Oh, right.
Well, I had one client, Maverick, drop off their machine today, and I was surprised because they were talking to HP, and HP actually wanted the guy to go into this case and pull out the CMOS battery.
To do a reset of the PRAM?
And it's like I'm going, no, the machine is not booting right. And everything else, and I'm thinking, what good?
Remember on desktops, you used to have that jumper that would reset your BIOS?
Yeah.
Well, the other way to reset your BIOS is pull the battery. But in a laptop, that's terrible.
But yeah, even in a hard drive, it's not going to accomplish the machine not booting. I mean, it was seeing the hard drive, it was booting, it was getting stuck at Windows screens.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
why you
help.
Would tell
different
somebody
symptoms.
To go in there and take out their...
Yeah, that absolutely won't help.
We had one like that last week or two ago where someone was, they were getting lines on their video. And so they took it somewhere and were told, yeah, you need more memory.
Oh, really?
Which was true, but it has nothing to do with lines on the video.
Right. Gee, maybe a video card?
Yes, it's the video card failing. Well, it's video memory was the problem.
I had one of those, too, and it was, but I couldn't do anything for them. Again, because they got one of these Dell pizza boxes.
Yeah.
That uses half cards.
Oh, yeah.
He goes, well, don't you have those in stock? No, I've got regular video cards, but you got this half card. Well, why do they do that? I says, well, that's how you got the machine cheaper.
Cheap. But on computers that use shared video, there can be issues when you're getting video artifacts or lines or strange things on the video. It can mean your main memory is failing because it's using your main memory as video memory.
Right.
So that's annoying.
It could also mean you just have a really lousy driver.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's causing the artifacts because it's not segmenting memory correctly.
Yep.
It used to be in the old, remember on the Apple II you could do this, and on the early Windows machine, you could actually change where you were looking in memory for your video so you could see data.
Yep. And when the computer got too hot, the little metal pins on the chips would make the chips rise out of the circuit boards.
Yep.
So you had to turn it off, let it cool, and push all the chips back down.
The Apple III, which nobody remembers, we got our first.
I've got one.
We got our first Apple III in, and it wouldn't boot. So I called up Apple. I said, "What the?" And they said, "Lift up the front edge about 6 inches and let go." I said, "What?
Yeah,
just do it." Yeah. It booted up fine. In transit, the chips being shaken around, the chips walk out of the sockets. And it's percussive maintenance. You drop it and bang, you're on your way. Does that music mean that we have to take a little break?
Yes,
okay,
it does,
let's
sir.
Do that. We'll take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you on the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
When you become a member or renew your membership to Jazz 90.1, you receive your Jazz 90.1 member card, our thanks, and more. Because with your Jazz 90.1 member card, you qualify for discounts at many fine member card businesses, including 45 East Fine Jewelers, Adams Basin Inn, Antonetta's Italian Restaurant, The Bop Shop, Bert Shapiro Photography, Leaf and Bean Coffee Company, Lorraine's Food Factory, Mary Boyce of Mario's Hair Studio, Mind and Body Connection, New Health Cafe, Sound Source, and Tuxedo Corner, Irondequoit and Gates locations, and Small World Bakery. For a complete and up-to-date list of member card businesses, visit our website at www.jazz901.org. To get your member card, call 966-5299 and become a member of Jazz 90.1.
Jazz 90.1 welcomes our newest member card business, Hedonist Artisan Chocolates.
As internet technology advances, so does the threat of cybercrime. In times like these, we must protect ourselves from cybercrime. Antivirus software, firewalls, and security patches are just the beginning. Never open suspicious emails and only navigate to trusted sites. Protect your child by installing parental control software and monitoring their computer use. To learn more about cybercrime, visit ncpc.org or contact your local law enforcement agency.
A message from the U.S. Department of Justice, National Crime Prevention Council, and the Ad Council.
This is Rob Linton. Join me every midday from 10 a.m. till noon right here on Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And you are listening to the greatest computer show in the known universe.
And you should have seen Rob jump.
Rob jumped. He's getting it. He's getting there. He's doing good.
He's doing really good.
We are Sound Bites, and here we are on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Don't forget to give us a call. You can do that if you're in the 585 area code at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or call us toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. It's about 22 minutes after the hour. I kind of miss saying that. At least 22 minutes after the hour on my screen. And
I've got 22 after
you. All right, good. Then we're all semi-okay
here. About 23
here.
On that clock.
And, of course, you can join us on IRC, which I seem to have suddenly connected to somehow. I don't know even how that happened, but I did. Or you can send us a tweet at sound_bytes on Twitter. And before we get back to the phones, let me go back to the news. Microsoft plans to remove Internet Explorer from the versions of Windows 7 that it ships in Europe. Reacting to antitrust concerns expressed by European regulators, Microsoft plans to offer a version in Europe that has the browser removed. Computer makers would then have the option to add the browser back in, ship another browser, or ship multiple browsers, according to a confidential memo that was sent to PC makers. To ensure that Microsoft is in compliance with European law, Microsoft will be releasing a separate version of Windows 7 for distribution in Europe that would not include Windows Internet Explorer, the software maker said in the memo. Microsoft will offer IE8 separately and free of charge and will make it easy and convenient for PC manufacturers to pre-install IE8 on Windows 7 machines in Europe if they so choose. PC manufacturers may choose to install an alternate browser instead of IE8, and that has always been the case, and they may install multiple browsers if they wish. European regulators have said in January that the inclusion of a browser in Windows, something Microsoft has done for more than a decade, was likely a violation of European antitrust law. Europeans actually take their antitrust law seriously, apparently.
Well, yeah, the EU is very consumer-friendly, and the U.S. government is very business-friendly.
Yeah, exactly. Basically, but of course, the way this has worked, I don't know.
There's never been more competition in the marketplace than now, you know. So even without that, Microsoft is losing market share.
Because it takes 10 years for anything to get through the process.
Well, yeah, exactly right. Also, Firefox is very strong in Europe. IE had only a 59.5% share in Europe. It's 31 point some odd percent in for Firefox. So we'll see what that means. The browserless versions, dubbed Windows 7E, will be distributed in all members of the European Economic Area, as well as Croatia and Switzerland. In addition, Microsoft will strip the browser from the Europe-only N version of Windows, which also removes the Windows Media Player. We get stuck with all that stuff. But in Europe, they can be without IE or without IE and without the Windows Media Player.
And doesn't that still slap in the face when Gates stood in front of, you know, what was it, the senator that and said, no, the operating system has to have IE in it or it won't work right? And that one judge's son said, oh, well, my son was able to take it out.
Yeah. Clearly he lied. And now nobody's going back and saying, under oath,
holding
you lied
feet,
to us.
Holding his feet to the fire.
We don't care. America doesn't care. All right, back to the phones. And from right here in beautiful Greece, New York, it's Linda. Welcome, Linda. What's your question?
Do you have to push a button, Dave?
Do you have to push a button, Dave?
No,
you're on. You're on, Linda?
I'm not hearing Linda.
Oh, wait a minute. I'm sorry.
Linda?
Yep.
Yeah, I'm here.
There we are.
Okay.
Yes, gentlemen, how are you?
Peachy, how are you?
I'm fine.
Dave is still learning the buttons.
I know I don't have a virus because they took care of it, and I do the security tango every week.
Excellent.
Okay, I've got two separate hard drives, and they've each got 200 gigs on it. My computer is running so slow, I could walk faster than my computer is running. And I've got a 64. I roll all this stuff down. So my processor is an AMD Athlon 64-bit 3200 series. And I can't figure out why it's running so slow.
How much memory do you have?
You have to ask me that.
That's really the key question at this point.
That's one of the big keys.
And are you running Windows 32-bit or Windows 64-bit?
Well, and if you go into the control panel under System, you click on System, that will tell you basically all the information we're asking you here. Because on that very first screen, it's going to tell you the version of Windows that you're running, what service pack you're on, and the processor and the amount of memory in the machine.
Yeah, I believe it's just 1 gig, I believe.
Well, that may be part of your problem, Linda. I know you, and I know you run a lot of stuff at the same time. One gig is not a lot of room for a lot of things running simultaneously.
And something you can do is bring up the Task Manager, Control-Alt-Delete, and see what processes are running. And there's going to be dozens of them there you don't know, but if there's way too many of them, that could be. Yep. And you can see which ones are using how much of your CPU. So if there's something using too much CPU percentage, that could be the problem.
Oh, I am. Unfortunately, I haven't got the faintest idea what you're talking about.
Well, what I'm saying is that if you were to have,
say, you had Word and Excel and Mail and Web and video editing and photo editing.
I don't have all that.
Right. So, but looking
in
your Task Manager,
not a lot of RAM. So, if you have more than say two programs open. Plus whatever's running in the background.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Right. Yeah, that's what we're saying.
And so, if you're running 32-bit Windows on a 64-bit chip, does that cause problems?
No.
Okay.
No, it shouldn't.
No.
But if you're running 64-bit Windows and 32-bit programs, that could be a problem.
Yeah. So my suggestion, Linda, is probably another gig of RAM.
Okay, I've got one more question if you can handle it.
Sure.
I've got a standard video card on my computer. You know, it just came with the computer.
Right.
I click on, some website will have a video. I click on that. I get about 5 seconds, and it stops. Then I get 5 seconds, and it stops. Do I need a better video card?
Well, the video card is not going to help that. That's the stream on the off the Internet.
And the amount of RAM in the computer.
So my first suggestion is the RAM. Once you've got the RAM, then you can see how the video runs. And if you need more video, then great, you need more video. But don't spend that money before you have to.
Because it could also be the Internet connection speed or something between you and the other end at that moment.
Right.
Causing
you to
suffer.
So my suggestion here is to start with another gig of RAM at least.
Okay.
Okie doke.
So, oh, I guess I have to bring it down to Dave then.
There you go. There you go. Thanks, Linda.
Okay, bye.
Yeah, that's one of the interesting problems that we have, of course, is that there are so many factors involved in something.
Well, that's the thing. And unless you're sitting right there in front of the machine, because folks will try to remember to tell you most of the stuff, but then they're always going to forget, oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
And remember,
that could be a key point.
You remember when a gig, if anything, was huge?
Yeah, right. Heck, I can remember when I went from 64 meg up to 128. And how expensive memory was. What was it? 1 meg sticks?
Yeah, I remember paying $1,000 a meg for memory. And now, what is it, $50 a gig?
Well, yeah, you can get 1 gig sticks for like $15-$20.
What I have noticed was, and what typically happens is the older RAM is going up in price now. So you want DDR1 or DDR2, they're getting a little expensive because all the current machines are DDR3.
Well, that's the way it always is. I mean, matter of fact, I had somebody that used the old, what's the other RAM that you got? You got to use in
ECC?
You had to use it in pairs.
Well, that was the motherboard.
Yeah.
So if you had a 32-bit machine and you used 16-bit RAM, you needed two at a time.
Right.
Some of the early Macs were 32-bit Macs, but they had 8-bit RAM cards.
This was a special type
of
memory,
though. So you needed four memory at a time.
Even if the slots were empty, you had to have these blanks in it.
RAM bus?
Oh, I'm having a brain fart. I'll think of it.
It doesn't matter. You're old. It happens. Get over it. Wow. Here's an email. We got an email. We also take email questions at Sound on our website. You can click on the link and leave us a question. This is from Shane. He's in Kyneton, Victoria, Australia. This is one of our Australia listeners. Yeah. And he's written and said, what?
G'day, mate.
Okay, he probably hates that.
Yeah.
But then again, he's in Australia. What's he going to do to us, right? Okay. So,
he's Australian. He's going to come up here and beat us.
Right. He's going to knife in one hand and crocodile in the other, and he's going to come in here and beat us. All right. The question is, the Soundbites Archives does not have any of the May 2009 programs. I need my fix, guys. What happened? Cheers, Shane. Well, Shane, what happened is we took a hiatus. We took the month of May off.
We got canned.
That's a nice word there, Nick.
Thank you. As we transitioned from WHAM to Jazz 90.1, WGM's WGMC. What happened was this, Shane. The folks here in Rochester at WHAM, wonderful people, and they did a really, they loved us. We loved them. But corporate went through some cost-cutting measures, and we were among them.
And corporate is like, down in Atlanta,
I think?
Somewhere, Texas,
yeah, I think.
Who knows?
But the point is that it was corporate that dumped us, not the local folks, and they felt as bad as we do. Mm-hmm. Jeff Howlett, great human being. I love Jeff. He's a great guy.
And I hope he still listens.
I hope so, too.
Yeah.
And Rob Linton, ladies and gentlemen. Who was our producer on Wham for many years is the general manager here at Jazz 90.1, and he was kind enough to give us a couple of hours once a week on his station. So that's why we're back on the air, but there are no May archives because we were on hiatus, and I'm going to keep calling it that.
Yeah,
that's his story, and you're sticking to it.
That's the way it's going to be from now on. So there we have
that. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean,
exactly.
Like you say, now we just won't get bumped, for sports or anything else. We'll be consistent every, Saturday from 12 to 2. Matter of fact, another email that you have in there, and I hope you guys don't mind, but I put us out there and offered. We have a listener that's in Hawaii.
Hawaii.
So glad that we're back.
Well, here he is, Arthur from Hawaii.
Yeah. He was asking, that he'll be able to listen now 6 o'clock in the morning his time, but it's perfect. That's when he gets up. He turns us on and starts his day now Saturday mornings with us. He's glad to have us on. Glad we're back. And I said I wrote him back. I haven't heard back yet. I don't know why. But that if he wanted us to come to Hawaii and do a show there, just to ask, one of their stations out there, we'd gladly come out. And do
they have to pay for it. Let's not be.
Yeah, if his local jazz community access station wants to pay for us to come,
get us to come out there. I mean, The longest running computer show?
We would be we would make that
sacrifice
yes. for them. We would be happy to do that just for the folks in Hawaii.
Hey, you know, and maybe even hang out with Dog the Bounty Hunter.
That's it. We'll hang out with Dog. Somebody said that last night in the Second Life. Every Friday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 o'clock Linden Time, we do a couple of hours on Sound Bites. The wonderful folks at Finger Lakes Community College gave us a section of their island for Sound Bites, and you know, we have 40, 50 people on a semi-regular basis.
Yeah. Well, that group's up to 197 members.
They don't all come every week. I'm saying we actually get, you know, 40
but
or 50 people.
We get a good crowd and a good bunch of questions, and it's kind of working out pretty good there.
Yep. So, yeah, it really is. We're having fun in Second Life, and Arthur, we would be... you're welcome. We're delighted that he's probably listening right now. 6 o'clock. It's now... for him, it's got to be 6:30 in the morning on a Saturday. What are you doing up at 6:30 on a Saturday? Is Saturday supposed to be? I know what I'm doing
on
Saturday.
That probably is sleeping in.
I'm not selling Kona coffee. Yeah. That's what I'm doing.
My dad for...
He's probably lying in bed with the radio on.
For 40 years, my dad worked at Kodak, got up at 4:30 so he could be to work by 6. So on the weekends, he slept in till 6.
Yeah, right.
Well, it's hard to get out of that routine, you know, because you get... Then come Monday morning, you wouldn't want to drag your butt out.
Oh, look, and he's at aloha.net. How cool is that? Save that one for Rob. He might not care, but then again, he might. So I'm thrilled. I'm thrilled that we're back on. Rob did a real nice thing for us.
How's that pushpin map we were running for a while? How's that?
Where's that link? Frapper. It's on our website under links. If you go to our website and look under links, you can see the Frapper community is there. I think it's number 6 on the list, maybe 6, 7. It might be moved down again. They added a couple of things. Added Harry Leg to that list and a couple of other things. So
good old Leg Man. Matter of fact, starting next week, we'll have the rest of the bumps. So everything that you hear on Sound Bites, as far as bump musics and everything else, is all due to my friend. Yes, he is real, Harold Leg.
Now I have to admit that I've heard his voice innumerable times. He's got those golden pipes.
Yes.
But Harry Leg, seriously, his parents need to be sat down and talked to.
Well, his sister Peg has got the real problem. Yeah.
that was the joke for the longest time. And I know his sister, I believe her name is Linda, you know, we'd kid her. Because I've met Harry's parents, and they're sweet people. But, you know, we were kidding them about, how could you name your daughter Peg? And this is before they knew about it. And they go, what?
Yeah.
And they turn to Harry and they go, what did you say, Harold? So when he got called Harold, he knew he was in trouble.
Yeah, right. This is why you give your children 3 names.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Right? So that they know when they're actually in trouble. That's the way you do it.
Serial killers all have 3 names and political assassins.
That's true. All right. Back to the news. The European Commission will proceed with its antitrust case against Microsoft, regardless of the announcement late Thursday that the software giant is stripping Internet Explorer from the next incarnation of its operating system, Windows 7, in Europe. The commission has accused Microsoft of stealing an unfair advantage for Internet Explorer by tying or bundling it in with Windows since 1996. So even this move to get rid of it, for them didn't stop the antitrust suit. Europe's top antitrust regulator said in a statement released Friday that it notes with interest Microsoft's statement, which was made in a blog post late Thursday here in the U.S. But the European Commission said it would proceed with the case and would draw up a remedy that allows computer users genuine consumer choice. So while Microsoft is doing this voluntarily right now, what they're saying is they're going to make it mandatory so that the Microsoft can't conveniently forget at some point to do it again. Yeah. Well, and what they're saying is that, you know, Microsoft has often honored its agreements in the breach more than in the actual doing thereof. So, that's just historical fact.
It's easier to pay the fine than it is to worry about it in the first place.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Grace Hopper said that. It's easier to beg forgiveness than to...
Ask permission.
You know, proof will be in the pudding, I guess.
Stephen.
Well, and what we'd mentioned last night in Second Life, too, is this argument's been going on for 10, 15 years. In the early days, it was Netscape and AOL complaining that the IE browser was bundled by default. And basically, that killed Netscape as a company. They had to shift over to server businesses. Because you got Internet Explorer for free with Windows, so most people didn't know about or didn't bother downloading Netscape. So it was the same arguments have been going on for decades. It's quite ironic, maybe is the word.
Yep.
Come on, Eileen.
What?
It's the name of the song.
Okay. All right. Well, you can hear it. I'm still having trouble hearing. I've even got the right thing now, but it's still kind of faint. We're going to take another quick break. But we will be back in just a couple of more minutes, so give us a call. I'll repeat the numbers when we come back. You are listening to member-supported Jazz 90.1 with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, on the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites. We'll be right back in just a couple of minutes.
Got a computer question? Call the boys now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299.
When you become a member or renew your membership to Jazz 90.1, you receive your Jazz 90.1 member card. Our thanks and more. Because with your Jazz 90.1 member card, you qualify for discounts at many fine member card businesses, including 45 East Fine Jewelers, Adams Basin Inn, Antonetta's Italian Restaurant, The Bop Shop, Bert Shapiro Photography, Leaf and Bean Coffee Company, Lorraine's Food Factory, Mary Boyce of Mario's Hair Studio, Mind and Body Connection, New Health Cafe, Sound Source, and Tuxedo Corner, Arondequoit and Gase locations, and Small World Bakery. For a complete and up-to-date list of member card businesses, visit our website at www.jazz901.org. To get your member card, call 966-5299 and become a member of Jazz 90.1.
Jazz 90.1 welcomes our newest member card business, Hedonist Artisan Chocolates.
Hi, this is Otto Bruno, inviting you to a musical party this and every week on the Sunday Music Festa and the Otto Show. Our guests may include Frank Sinatra, Tony Bennett, Bing Crosby, Rosemary Clooney, or who knows, maybe even Count Basie or Joe Williams, Bobby Darin. Lady Ella herself could stop by. It's a musical celebration every week on the Sunday Music Festa and the Otto Show. That's Sundays at 12 noon right here on Jazz 90.1.
Hey, this is Derek Lucas, host of The Spectrum. Join me every Sunday night from 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray. And Rob Linton has left the office.
He's not going to stick around.
Rob Linton has left the building. And at 42 minutes after the hour, you are listening to the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. You can give us a call at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free at Toll free at 1-800-790-0415. And, of course, on the web, it's Soundbites. You click on the link and you get to send us an email. Like Stephen did from Buffalo, New York. And this is, tell him we'll get to the phone call in just a minute. I'm in the middle of an email. And what we have here is Stephen from Buffalo, New York, who says, longtime listener, occasional caller, Linux aficionado, first time Mac owner. Yes, I have been lured over to the dark side. Would you please review, compare, and opine? That we can do. Regarding these virtualization applications, VMware Fusion, VirtualBox, and Parallels, mostly with regard to running Windows XP or 7 and or one of the Nixes.
They're all pretty much
on a MacBook, 2.4 gigahertz Intel, 4 gigabytes of RAM.
Yeah, all the virtualization programs are pretty much identical. Parallels was the first one released on the Mac, and so that tends to get a little more publicity. But VMware Fusion is from VMware, which is a much bigger name in the IT world. Right. And it has a lot of neat options for downloading VMware appliances. So if you're thinking about running some of the Unixes, you can download a pre-built Unix appliance, and it's just a file, an ISO file. And then you set it up in VMware, and it's already installed, already running, already configured. So that's kind of a neat option for Fusion owners. And then Sun VirtualBox, I've just been playing with a little bit recently. Its big advantage is that it's free,
right?
Which is always a cool advantage. Yep. In fact, we joked in the past that you can get VirtualBox for free. You can download the Windows 7 beta for free, and it will work for a year. So you can get Windows free for a year.
Right.
If you really need to. And we're wondering how many people will actually buy Windows when it comes out because you can get it for free.
Well,
and especially since Microsoft let it work for a year. I could see a couple of months, but it's actually quite liberal of them for a year.
But the real question is, and I haven't looked, but is it for a year or up to a year? In other
Good
words, will
question.
They send a kill a kill switch?
And a year from when? One of the stories I read is it was when they released the public beta in March, it was a year from March.
Right.
So it may not be a year from now. It may have been a year from then.
Mm-hmm. And I will say on my Linux boxes, running VirtualBox works great under Windows. But I'm having a little trouble with Windows running XP runs great under Linux. But this is with VirtualBox. I am having a little bit of trouble with Windows 7. I'm having trouble getting the network to work.
And some of that's probably because it's so new and
But I'm saying, Windows 7, and everybody needs to remember this, is still a beta product. Nobody's going to promise you it'll work.
In fact, they'll promise you it won't work.
That's
it definitely will fail.
I will guarantee you that in some circumstances it will fail, so get over it.
That's the norm for any computer anyway.
Well, that's true. That is true. But that's the deal with that. So you can never know one way or the other.
And then the fourth option on the Mac is Apple's Boot Camp, which comes with the operating system, no additional software required. That allows you to partition your machine and use it as a dual boot. So you boot Windows only or Mac only. That has some advantages if you're doing... That better not be soda.
It's green tea.
Green tea. Oh. Shaking the tea. He's shaking a soda can.
Stand clear. I look to see, and it does say shake well before
shake
opening.
Well before
it's
opening.
My little...
Because some joker put that on there, so you spray yourself. Away from the mic. Shake. Yeah. But, so Boot Camp, which will then boot your Mac into a Windows-only computer, has advantages if you're doing graphic-intensive programs like games or CAD or... I told you.
It's fine.
Towel, please, Rob.
Towel? There's nothing spilled. Look, one little thing.
Yeah,
that's it.
Yeah, so if you want to run games on Windows games on your Mac, which is one of the reasons people want to run Windows on their Mac, then you're much better off with Boot Camp and you're booting a Windows PC. And since Apple typically uses higher-end, better-quality hardware, it's a really good Windows PC.
Right. Well, but the big difference, of course, is if you run something like Boot Camp or any sort of dual-boot system, you can run one or the other, but not both.
Right.
With things like
convenience of virtualization
or
speed of dual boot.
Right. Yeah. So those are your choices.
And you can use both. You can get one of the virtualization programs and point it at your Boot Camp partition. So you have one Windows install that you can run in parallel if you need to, or boot native if you need to.
Right. The nice thing is, it's all about the choices. All right, our next caller on the line, Dan. From Rochester, New York. Welcome, Dan. What's your question?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Recently, I uninstalled the McAfee security suite, which came with my computer, and I downloaded the free CA system, which is part of my Time Warner Roadrunner package, which I'm entitled to download and run their system. My question is this. After downloading and now installing the CA Security Center, my boot up, my startup, seems to be slower. And also, that little Microsoft jingle, it's broken. So for first, I thought maybe I had a problem with my audio card. But when I play other audio clips, such as going to YouTube and playing a music video, the music is fine. So it's something in the startup. I went to MS Config. I've turned off a number of things that were running, or should I say starting up in the background, like Adobe or my Photoshop or QuickTime. All that is basically turned off at startup. The only thing I see now is a bunch of stuff related to the CA security
suite. Right, that's what's doing
it. And that's what your problem is. It's not that the jingle is broken. It's that the system is so busy doing that other stuff, it doesn't have any time
the
startup jingle.
You may be able to set the preferences in the CA software to not scan at boot, but then you're limiting the security and safety of having an antivirus program.
Right. You know what the jingle sounds like. Don't worry about it. As long as you see it, getting booted in.
It's not a symptom of anything specifically wrong with your machine.
Okay.
How much memory do you have in the computer?
Let me go to my computer. I right-click on that. And
how fast is it?
Yep.
I'll tell you right now.
Yeah, the faster it is and the more memory you have, the more time it can take to running that antivirus.
I only have 512 megabytes of RAM.
Yeah.
There you are. Yeah, that's your problem.
Would definitely help.
If you doubled it, as we said to Linda earlier today, 2 gig is not a bad idea, particularly with all the stuff that people load in the background nowadays.
If they're going to be down the road, I mean, come October, we're going to be talking System 7, and you're going to want minimum 2 gig.
But even though I'm running Windows XP Home...
Yeah, XP Home. We'll take advantage. This is the beauty of Windows XP. Right now, up to 3 gig. If you throw it 3 gig of memory, it will utilize it in the 32-bit version. So, go for it. Because back in the old days with Windows 98 and that, I mean, we were at 128 meg.
Mm-hmm.
That was the limit. You could put more in it, but it'd just sit there and say, okay, good for you.
Gentlemen, I don't want to scare you, but I still have an IBM ThinkPad, which I purchased over one decade ago. Occasionally, I will use it when I go on the road, and I still have dial-up running Windows 98 Second Edition, and it's good for checking email.
Yep.
I had three machines in this
256 meg RAM was probably the max on that.
Two of them from one client that still, he uses it just for basic WordPerfect documents. It works. Why pay for anything else? Because that's all it does. It boots up. It goes into WordPerfect. It works fine. End of story.
I had an old laptop that is at least 15 years old and had 64 meg of RAM, and that's all it had. And I loaded damn small Linux on it. And up until I bought my netbook, I was using it every day to take notes in meetings and things.
Mm-hmm.
It works.
I've got an old Windows 2000 PC that's got 64 megs in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, are you gentlemen familiar with the CA security, the firewall? I'm not exactly sure, and I called Time Warner on it, but I couldn't get a straight answer from them. They allegedly said somebody from CA security would call me, and I've never gotten a phone call.
In the firewall,
there's something where it says access, safe, restricted, server, safe, restricted. Some of the stuff does show with check marks, but there's a number of stuff that has question marks, and allegedly those question marks mean, they're not sure of this, this is under the advanced application control.
One question for you though: is this the only computer in the house?
Yes.
So you don't have like a Linksys router or anything like
No,
that?
No, sir.
Okay. Right. Then
generally in the advanced stuff, you don't need to worry about that for the desktop. Some of that stuff really has more to do with corporate environments, server environments, things like that.
And if you have more folks on a network.
Right.
That's why I was asking whether you had more, because it can control, you like Nick was saying, you got a lot more features that you can control stuff with.
Right. Mm-hmm. And you may want to get a network router like Linksys, Netgear, Belkin, a dozen companies make them, because it gives you a hardware firewall and a private network separated from the internet. When your computer is directly connected to your internet service, you're on the live public internet, and all the millions of bad guys scanning through the internet will find your computer. When you have a router in place, they stop at the router and have a harder time getting to your computer.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Okay. Well, gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Several people have asked me to expand on the Security Tango and to add a section for Linux and a section for the Mac. So we started the Linux section. And I talked about, how you download and install the antivirus software, and it's really click here, and you're done. and then I went looking into the firewall situation. Well, I mean, I already knew about it, but I went to write it up, and I realized, you're done. There's a firewall called IP tables that loads automatically. There's also something, a HIPS system, HIPS, host-based intrusion prevention system that prevents people from outside the network from getting in and doing things to your machine. It's built into Linux. It's already there. You don't have to do anything to get it. Now, you can tweak it all you want.
Yeah, but nothing's wrong with that.
Right. Nothing wrong with that. But for, and if you're running a server, you better tweak it.
Yes.
But the cool part about it is, let's say Firefox isn't in that system, right? I run a command that calls Firefox and runs it. And then I do some surfing and stuff like that. It writes all the rules for me. And then I can, if I want to, go back and edit those rules. But it writes them all for me, and it makes a lot of really sane choices. So I'm actually kind of impressed. I'm having trouble putting that succinctly and easily for some of that stuff, but it works. All right, I talked about this a minute ago. And I know we've only got a minute or two.
No, we got a few minutes. Okay. We got about 4 minutes.
Sarah Sharp, a self-styled geek-ess and Linux developer at Intel's Open Source Technology Center, who had recently been working on the Linux USB subsystem, announced on her blog that support of USB 3.0 will soon be integrated into the Linux kernel. This makes Linux the first operating system to support the standard. If you can't wait and have the expertise necessary, she includes instructions on how to get USB 3.0 support in Linux now. The basic specifications for USB 3.0... get ready for this. Show it to have a transfer rate of 5 gigabits per second. USB 3.0, 5 gigabits per second.
It's faster than Ethernet.
You could create, well, Ethernet will go
well,
up to 100.
Standard gigabit Ethernet,
right,
yeah.
Right, gigabit which, Ethernet. Yeah. But yes, so you could create whole networks on using USB that are 5 times faster than standard gigabit Ethernet.
And this is where I think they're all, like I said before, with the new i7 chip, the Intel 7 chips right. coming out, now Windows 7, I think you're finally going to see, now USB 3.
Are there any USB 3 cards shipping yet? The standard's
well,
not even ratified.
That's the thing right now. Folks. You've got the software, but the hardware is just a little bit behind. But really, the next set of machines you buy, make sure they have the USB 3 spec in them, or you can make an add-in. You can buy an add-in card that has the USB. You can buy that right now, actually, and then you can transfer data, and then you buy the USB keys that use the 3.0 spec, and you'll just be sucking data in so fast you won't even know what happened. Just astonishing stuff. 5 gigabits per second.
There are companies shipping USB 3 cards.
Yep. So you could add one into your Linux kernel right now and make it happen. But I'll tell you what, it's the future. So if you're looking to buy a new machine, either make sure it's got the USB 3 spec in it now, or that you'd be prepared to just buy. You know, the cards are like $20. I mean, it's not like the cards are going to be $200.
Well, the USB 3 cards may be $200 when they first hit the market.
Well, right. But you know, within a year they'll be $20.
But you know, we keep saying how remarkable it is that you know the advances we keep getting. But you think about it though, it's been kind of slow.
Yeah, it has been.
Because look at your PlayStation 3. That's using 128-bit.
Yep.
Hello, we're
yep.
still back yep. at 32-bit?
Yep.
And computers have
well,
been around.
Well, it's backward compatibility.
Right. And why rewrite what you've already got? But I'll tell you what bothers me is that over the past, 3 years? It's all been evolution, not revolution. You know? Mm-hmm. Everything we've seen, and I'm talking about the Macs and the PCs and Linux, it's a little bit more the same old, same old. But it's still the same old, same old.
Yeah.
You know? Where's the Newton? You know, where's the next breakthrough, the next yep. holy mother of pearl thing? The iPhone was one. The iPod was one.
Yep. Yep.
But where, and now it's just, I got a faster iPhone with more memory. Okay, that's nice, mm-hmm. but it's not revolutionary, and I'm waiting for the next revolution.
And that's what you're wondering, you know, because we got the holidays coming up, and Windows is banking on, you know, Windows 7.
Yep.
What's the Mac going to wind up hoping for?
Well, that's right. Well, they've got the new form factors. But again, it's evolution. Not, Windows 7 is evolution. It's not anything new and wonderful.
There's a book called Where's My Jetpack? A Guide to the Amazing Science Fiction Future That Never Arrived.
Yep.
Yeah, you know, 1939 World's Fair, they were showing jetpacks and flying cars and video telephones. We almost have video telephones now with Skype on your computer,
right.
but it's not that widespread of use.
Dick Tracy had wristwatch TVs, two-way wrist TVs.
Yeah.
Where's my two-way wrist TV?
I saw a company that's making them. They're huge, and they cost a fortune, but...
Right. Although I did see a watch that has a USB port and enough RAM, you can put pictures in it.
Remember the Casio Data Bank? I had one of those.
Sure.
It had a sensor on it, and you ran a program on your computer, and you held your wrist up to the screen, and it sensed the flashing light pattern on your computer screen, and you could program your calendar and appointments into it.
Yep. Except I think it didn't work with an LCD screen.
Right, it was CRT.
You had to have a CRT screen, absolutely. Yeah.
But, you know, that too still might come up, you know.
Things are coming along, but right now we're kind of in a lull, and it's kind of sad, but there you have it. It's not that new cool things aren't coming out, but, you know. All right, we are going to take a break. It is coming up on 1 o'clock. It's 12:59 p.m. here on the left coast of the United States. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. You're listening to member-supported Jazz 90.1. And this is the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes, so stay tuned.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District and official media partner of the 2009 Xerox Rochester International Jazz Festival. Jazz 90.1.
Streaming online at jazz901.org.
Here with her new CD, At Last, Anne Hampton Calloway is my guest. It struck me that it must be more confining to record a commercially appealing disc than to perform live in concert.
You know, it's that you're raising a very interesting point. As a songwriter, it is alarming to me how I feel like the Emily Dickinson of song, because I have hundreds of songs that are hidden and unheard, waiting to be discovered. And every time I work with a record producer, they always seem to want me to be doing Great American Standards, because I think they see me primarily as a singer and as an interpreter. And I think they're afraid of the unknown. So on the new CD, which was originally going to be all Anne Hampton Calloway songs, we have a very carefully chosen two Anne Hampton Calloway songs. It's very eclectic. It's almost like a collage. It's kind of, the last song is a beautiful piece called On My Way to You, which Alan and Marilyn Bergman contributed gorgeous words.
The many pipers I have made along the roads I've wandered.
And the first song asks the unanswerable question, what is this thing called love? It's sort of a way of embracing the many, many different routes and missteps and steps we take in the search for something that's truly deep and satisfying and inspiring. And so it was a very interesting process trying to choose songs that would reflect the many colors of the experiences leading up to finding my love. So it's a make-out album, and I don't think any home is complete without several. So, you know, I think, you know, those people out there who are trying to seduce somebody, get It Last, put it on, and just, you know, chill some champagne and see what happens. I'm here to help people's love lives as much as possible.
Anne Hampton Calloway sitting in with me and you. I'm Helen Borgers.
Hear a full hour of Sitting In with Helen Borgers every Friday at noon on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Do you know the score regarding your personal finances? Your credit score, that is. The National Foundation for Credit Counseling wants you to get in the game, know your credit score, and understand how to improve it. The NFCC can help request your credit report and explain what the numbers, terms, and abbreviations all mean. Their certified counselors can also advise you on sound financial practices that can help improve your score. For more information about credit reports, call the NFCC at 1-800-388-2227. This has been a public service message from the NFCC.
Jazz 90.1 is your one source of information for the annual Rochester International Jazz Festival, now through June 20th. Join Jazz 90.1 as we broadcast live each day from Jazz Street in downtown Rochester, just outside of Kilbourn Hall, between 4 and 8 p.m.
And we are live in downtown Rochester at the Rochester International Jazz Festival. I'm Rob Linton.
We'll have live artist interviews, giveaways, commentary, and much more.
We've got a line of special guests. Let's get right to it.
Yes, we do.
My name is Donato James.
Gato James.
Jazz 90.1's Rob Linton and Derek Lucas bring you the most in-depth coverage of the RIJF each year, live from Jazz Street.
We're inviting folks to stop by. We have somebody who stopped by to become a member. We've had folks dropping in dollars to the Jazz Jar.
You can also stop by the Jazz 90.1 booth to meet on-air personalities from your favorite Jazz 90.1 programs and register to win great prizes. We'll see you on Jazz Street.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
You know, I can't even finish my bear claw in the break. That's how short these breaks are. That's wonderful.
Yeah, you know, they're just give us a few minutes at least to, you know, go make a quick potty stop or whatever we, you know, have to do, but...
Right, it's tight.
Folks are getting one heck of a lot of show.
There's a lot of show, and that's all due to Rob Linton and the folks at Member Supported Jazz 90.1. So give us a call. If you're in the 585 area code, the number is 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. If you're outside the 585 area code, let's say maybe you're in, Hawaii, you can give us a call at 1-800-790-0415. Just call in and say hello. Even if you don't have a computer question.
I wish the guy down in Australia, just to bust our chops,
would call in.
Yes, would call in.
I don't know what he's. I think it's a Tuesday in Lent for him right now. I don't know the international dateline that well.
He's into Sunday.
I think he's some. Oh yeah, he's in the middle of a Sunday. Yeah, call us and let us know how Sunday's going to be. You know,
what city was he in?
I have it here somewhere. Kyneton, Victoria, Australia.
Well, in Sydney, it's Sunday at 3 a.m.
Right. So maybe he's not listening.
Yeah.
Well, Saturday night, maybe he's still up on Sunday morning.
Yeah.
That could be. All right. We had an off-air question to talk about Second Life, what it's about, how to install the software and all that other stuff.
And just what it's all about.
Yeah. Second Life is a virtual world, and that doesn't say much.
And we can't get to it here.
Can't get to what? Second Life?
Second Life, because we're in a school.
Right, we're in a school, and they block that stuff. But Second Life is a virtual world. What happens is you sign on. You need a fairly hefty machine in terms of graphics, and you want to have a decent amount of RAM.
Yep.
A gig is probably enough if you're not running anything else at the same time, but at least a gig, and more is better. And a decent graphics card if you want to do really good graphics, right? And you get on, you have what's called an avatar. It's your little person in the world, and you can do whatever you want with that person. But the basic idea is it lets you interact with people. It's a social medium. And like I said, I've been doing social media seminars, so I'm all into the social media. And it's a social medium where you can get together with other people in the world. And last night we had people from all over the world.
Enchant there, she was from England.
Right.
Another one of my friends, she was from Denmark.
Right. And there's millions of places you can go in Second Life. People have built some astonishing things. It's as much as your mind can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
There's for those of you who are old Babylon 5 fans, there's the Babylon 5 station is out there. For those of you who are true literature fans, there's a thing called Literature Live. They built Dante's Inferno. You could walk through all of the levels
of hell.
Ben and
Jerry's is even there. You can go get a virtual ice cream.
Ben and Jerry's is there. Dell is there. Barack Obama is there. And what we do is every Friday night on the Finger Lakes Island, we have from 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, and that's 6 o'clock Linden time, because the servers for Second Life are on the left coast.
West coast, yeah.
We're on the right coast. but on the left coast, at 6 p.m. Linden time, or Pacific Standard Time. We're there every night for at least an hour, sometimes two, answering computer questions just like we do here, only we do it there. And the various avatars come in, and they walk in, and they sit down in chairs, and we chit-chat back and forth. They type, we talk so that it doesn't get crazy. But Second Life itself is simply, it's like the bulletin board or the old multi-user dungeons, the MUDs, extended. Yeah. You get multiple people speaking together and talking together, but they can also see each other and show things and do things, and you can create worlds. We have a couple of friends who have created an entire train layout that you can ride on their island.
It's literally a second life.
Yeah, it's a second life. Yeah. You can live there. You can make money there. You can do whatever you want there. You can get married there. You can do anything you want. So... that's what Second Life is about. Second Life is whatever you make it, just like your first life. It's whatever you make it out to be.
Well, believe it or not, right now, I happen to be making some pretty good money. Yep. Linden dollars. And you got to realize, Linden dollars don't equate to regular dollars.
they do pennies to the dollar, yeah.
But, this one program that I'm teaching, it's called Sculpted Studio. Now that I've been doing so much teaching on it, I can sell it, and I get a commission off the sales.
Nice.
So I've been able to make some money. Plus, it's been costing me money, you know, to do some of these this work and that. But, yeah, you can do a lot, train a lot, you know, learn a lot. It's a lot of fun. And meet some great people. I mean, the folks that I have met now. I mean, like I say, I got a couple folks down in Australia, Denmark, Portugal, here in the U.S., all over. Golda and them are out in Omaha. I mean, I got friends down in South Carolina. And you're talking to them real time. That's the wild thing. You know, I mean, you're talking to this friend down in Australia. She's actually up whatever time it is there in Australia, and you're talking to her.
Right.
And what a lot of especially education institutes, schools, colleges, and us do is they use Second Life for classroom instruction.
Right, distance learning type stuff.
Right, so you have all these people come together in a single, you know, virtual classroom that looks like a classroom with chairs.
Well, that's what Finger Lakes is for, is literally he sets up part of the island there and he teaches them to build and all that and to do various things. But, again, the sim I'm with is starting another sim which has is relative to the brain. And they're going to be doing seminars on brain damage and just various diseases and everything. And there's literally doctors from a couple different universities that are leaders in various areas there that are going to be giving lectures live.
Right. And that's the neat thing about Second Life is that not only are you talking to people, but also they can build models. So they can build a model of the brain, and you can look at things. You can walk through it if they make it big enough.
Yes, that's what they plan on doing.
So that's the one of the things you can do in Second Life. You're limited only by your imagination and your skill at building, which Dave is brilliant at, or your skill at programming or whatever. You're really only limited by your imagination.
Yes, exactly. Yep.
And that's the important thing.
Well, came up with that.
And some people are pretty imaginative.
With writing the code for that, that's pretty cool.
Well,
thank you. What Nick did here, which I know he won't toot his own horn, but he did something really great as far as folks that, like you were saying before, you've got to have some beef to your machine. But to exclude, you know, some folks weren't able to do it. They just didn't have it. So Nick came up with this program that literally on our webpage, folks can see the conversation that's being typed. And they can type in their questions and still be part of Second Life, even though they can't be in the island.
What you type on the webpage shows up in Second Life. What we type in Second Life shows up on the webpage, so you can all meet
be
back
a part
and forth.
Of it. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Back to the news.
Yeah.
This is sad. Pay attention, all you Macintosh people. Security experts have discovered two new attacks targeting Mac users. A new version of a worm and a Trojan hidden inside a porn site. So none of us will ever, well, most of us won't ever see it. Sophos on Wednesday discovered a new version of the Mac OS X Torrid worm, according to a Sophos blog post. On Tuesday, Pareto Logic warned about a porn site that was downloading malware that targets both the PC and the Mac. Mac users get redirected to the pagemac.php page, which downloads a quicktime.dmg file, according to the blog post. Sophos explained in the blog post on Thursday that visitors to the malicious porn site are told they have to download an ActiveX component to view the videos. Instead, a Trojan, dubbed OS10/Jahalaj, gets downloaded. As we demonstrated before, and as we'll no doubt explain again, the Mac malware threat is real, according to Sophos security researchers Graham Cluley, who is Clued. Hackers are deliberately planting malicious code on websites and using social engineering tricks to fool you into installing it on your computer. And I know that there are those diehard Mac people who will say, well, it's not really a problem because you'd have to actually install it. I'm sorry, but most people are trained to say yes.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And so whether or not, you know, you think it's a good thing, a bad thing, people are trained to say, okay, give me that.
Yes, and they don't bother to read the other information within the screen.
At least the first variant of this Trojan claimed to be a QuickTime update, but this one's an ActiveX update, and novice users don't know that ActiveX doesn't run on a Mac anyway.
Right, and that's the point. You know, you'll say, well, you'd have to be an idiot to click on the ActiveX. No, you just have to not know.
Right.
And there are a lot of people who don't know that ActiveX doesn't run on the Mac.
And how there's probably more that don't than actually do.
Right.
And how many times do Mac people get caught by those Windows screens that pop up and say,
Windows antivirus
C drive. Yeah. Oh, my God, my C drive has a problem. I better buy this thing for $30. They don't know they don't even have a C drive. But but that's the point. They don't know. It's social engineering, and it's designed to get around all of the safeguards that are already built into the Mac and ask you to actually run something. So some of those won't bother you because they are Windows Trojans, so they won't harm you. But if they're JavaScript code or whatever, they will bother you. So you need to be very careful, and you Mac people have to stop being smug and thinking you're bulletproof, because you're not.
It's interesting that the current exploits are running on the porn sites and the pirate sites. So the bad guys
starts with a P.
Right. Well, the bad guys are exploiting the fringe of society, just like real bad guys do. So it's don't walk down dark alleys with $20 bills hanging out of your street.
Exactly.
Unless you know the shout.
The shout?
Bill Cosby.
Oh, Bill Cosby. Because
I know the shout.
That's right, I know the shout. But that's a thing that's really important. And in fact, like I said, I'm going to be tweaking the Security Tango. So there's a Windows page and a Mac page and a Linux page. So I've slowly been working on that. I
just join the crowd.
I mean, stinking much in my.
I promise before Labor Day, this way it'll give me plenty of time.
Yeah.
Before Labor Day, I will have the recommendations coming up for the current buying season of the new systems.
Yeah,
it's because folks have been saying, "Well, why don't you update?" You know, it's like hitting a moving target. I'll get you up to, because with the Windows 7 coming out. Yeah, this is going to be a good one. You're going to want to go that way. So, yeah, I'll put up the new specs, what I deem, you know, as far as a user, average user. Right. Folks will say, well, you could do this and this. Yeah, I know. Just get over
it. Well, my favorite are the people who say, but you can buy a $500 video card so your games are faster. Yeah, if you're buying a $500 card to buy games, you're not an average user.
And you should buy the $1,500 video card because it'll make your games go really fast.
You piker, only $500.
Only $500, yeah.
Yeah.
I like the people that Dell is notorious for websites where they'll advertise one thing and then you go there and it's slightly different. And if you take a low-end machine and build it up, you get one price. You take a high-end machine and strip it down, you get a different price. You go back 10 minutes later and it's a different price.
Well, like we were talking about last night, but where folks also get stung is they'll show the price, but that quite often doesn't include copies of the OS.
Yeah.
Because if you want actual disk with your machine, that's going to cost you an extra $70.
And I found that $300 PC laptop
only
comes with Linux. You cannot buy it with Windows, and that's one reason it's only
$300. That's right. That's right.
You want to put Windows on it? That's another $200.
Right, exactly. All right, we have an email from Dan from Dansville, New York. Oh, man, he's got his own town.
Whoa.
Good for him. I don't know.
I'd like one in my own town.
Just a general question about VGA versus HDMI versus DVI subconnection. My new monitor has VGA and HDMI. My video card has DVI. Should I go out and buy a DVI to HDMI converter cable? I do have a DVI to VGA adapter. The big question is, will I see a big difference between them versus the cost of the cable?
Yes.
Thank you. Next question.
Well, one of the strange things is that HDMI's... Well, HDMI was designed for digital televisions, so that's the very common monitor connector you see on a television that you can also use as a monitor. The big trick is to look at the specifications that each port on your computer can put out, and each port on your monitor can accept. Because at VGA, you may get 1024 by 768. On DVI, you may get 1280 by 800. On HDMI, you may get 1376 by 782.
Right.
So it's weird resolutions. But in general, VGA is analog, and HDMI and DVI are digital connections. So theoretically, you get a better connection with HDMI or DVI.
And generally speaking, you should match your card to your input.
Yeah.
So as opposed to doing any sort of conversion, get a DVI card and go to DVI in your machine. Get an HDMI right. card, go to HDMI. If you can manage that, you're way better off than you are doing any sort of conversion.
Yeah, because if you're doing VGA and then you go, trying to do the DVI, it's not going to get you
much. But VGA is the common connector
right.
on most computers and monitors, so that's really been hard to replace with DVI. And in fact, DVI itself has now been replaced by DisplayPort,
right.
which is an even higher resolution. Supporting monitors up to 2500 by 1600, huge resolutions on larger monitors.
Yep, but there's a lot that you can do, but you really want to match if you can, because that's just generally speaking a much better deal. All right, that music in the background is Dave's subtle way of telling me we're going to take another quick break. But we'll be back on member-supported Jazz 90.1 with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. At 19 minutes after the hour, you're listening to the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on 1180 WHA. No. Oh, my God in heaven.
7 years of that's a hard habit to break.
7 years is a hard habit. This is the first time I made the mistake. Of course, it's only week 2. Member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Got a computer question? Call the boys now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll free 800-790-0415. Online at soundbites.org. Soundbites continues next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Jazz 90.1 is supported in part by our members and by Tavern 58 at Gibbs, located at 58 University Avenue, corner of Gibbs Street. Just 100 yards from the main Jazz Festival tent. Tavern 58 at Gibbs, open every day at 4 p.m. until well past midnight, offers steaks, fowl, seafood, and pasta, along with beers, wines, whiskeys, and single malt scotches. Tavern 58 at Gibbs will also have outside and indoor dining, live jazz, as well as provide shuttle service and parking during the festival. For more information about Tavern 58 at Gibbs, call 546-5800 or visit Tavern58.com.
Already by the late 50s, jazz as a popular black music was losing ground in a major way. It was a natural time to be doing things that sounded, absolutely fresh and conceptually new. Because what did they have to lose?
I'm Josh Jackson. Join us for Jazz, the 59 Sound, an hour of music by Miles Davis, Charles Mingus, and Dave Brubeck.
Monday, June 15th from 6 till 7 p.m. only on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Hello, this is Joelle Van Buren. Join me weekday mornings from 6 till 10 on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And you are listening to Soundbites. Contrary to rumor, we are on member-supported Jazz 90.1. It is 21 minutes after the hour. Give us a call. If you're in the 585 area code, it's 966-JAZZ. That's a 966-5299. If you're outside the 585 area code, it's 1-800-790-0415.
Talking about Rob hauling butt.
Yeah, Rob came in here, man, if looks could kill, I'd be a smoking ruin in the corner right now. Hey, come on, 7 years of that.
Oh, I know, no. Just another thing to pick on. Folks were in the forums last week saying, if you could have seen me trying to do these buttons.
Well, it wasn't so much Dave doing the buttons. It was Rob leaping over Dave to hit various buttons. It'll take you've got like 700,000 buttons over there. I'm surprised you can find anything to hit.
The board I'm getting pretty well nailed down, and it's just the phone system, because not after once I get somebody on the phone, I have to transfer them over, then I've got to hit this button over here on this one box. That's what I was missing before on Linda's. I had transferred it over, but I forgot to hit the additional button up here
But we're working it out. It's working on smooth. I think for only our second week, we're kicking butt, and still getting to the questions and getting the news out, and still having fun.
They were talking about the viruses in the IRC chat, and Drac said textually transmitted diseases. Very funny. Very funny. Very funny. Remember, you can not only give us a call at the numbers I just mentioned, you can send us email at on our website. You can join us in the IRC chat at Pound Soundbites. And you can tweet us at sound_bites. The numbers, again, if you're in the 585 area code, it's 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. For those of you in, say, Australia or Hawaii or Philadelphia, I don't care, wherever you are. All right, we'll go to an emailed question. We have Lee from Webster, New York, who writes, I have a compact Presario. I bought it about 2 years ago. The screen has horizontal black lines on the entire screen. It used to go away after 5 minutes. Now it doesn't. I cannot connect the first time I log in to Internet Explorer. I keep trying, and eventually I will connect. Is it possible for someone to come to my place to check it out, or can I bring it into your shop for repair? I don't know where your shop is located. Is there a phone number where I can reach you? Do you sell computers, and is there one you would recommend? Thanks, Lee. I think what we'll do is I'll give you guys this, and you can
And we can also recommend
the answer to all of that is yes, Lee.
And just check our websites out, too.
Right. All you have to do is go to soundbites.org. You'll see Dave's site listed. You'll see at Enright PC. You'll see Steve's site listed at Mac Ave. And you
got to give you a new logo for our Mac Ave logo rather than our Jesse Group logo.
Okay. I love that idea. And I'll put that up sometime in the next 10 or 15
years.
Yeah. But in either one of those, you can check them out and give them a call and find out from their website what's available and
be glad to help them out
And figure all that out. Hold on, I'm this is harder than it looks to do six things at once. I don't know if you guys knew that.
Yeah. I'm learning that right now. After all those years of, as you said, sitting on my butt in between you two guys.
Yep. Now you're doing all the work. That's exactly. I love this.
It works. It works for me. Yep. I'm loving it.
All right. Our next caller. I'm just going to save that as it is. You guys figure it out on your own. Okay. our next caller is, I have no idea what this is supposed
Mike.
To say. Mike from M-I-I-C-E. Is that what that looks like to you? Mike from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Mike. What's your question?
Yeah, hello. I'd like to know how to delete my DRM folder.
What's it?
Yeah, from what program? What?
It's the Digital Rights Manager.
Yes.
Right. Many programs use DRM, and they use it so that you can play songs and video that you that you've purchased online.
And if you remove that folder, you lose the ability to play that music or that game or whatever.
I know, but that was the recommendation of the site that I do use that for, one of the sites, and it recommended that I delete that folder.
Okay, it's easy enough to delete. Just click on it and hit the delete key. But
I'd be tempted to rename it.
Well, what they might be saying is it's corrupted.
And so, yes, I think that's what they're saying.
There you go. Okay. And you can't play music that you're supposed to be able to play?
No, it's not music, it's video.
Well, but whatever. You can't play something you're supposed to be able to play. So by deleting the DRM folder, it'll recreate it.
Yes.
Yeah, in that case, all you have to do is they told you where it is. They gave you the link to it.
Yeah, it's in my documents somewhere.
Well, you go find that, and you click on it once, and then you just hit the delete key, and that puts it in the trash bin, in the recycle bin. And then
theoretically,
you can do,
the next time you launch that program, it will recreate it.
It rebuilds it. If there's a problem, then you can always open up the recycle bin, right-click on that DRM folder, and say restore it. And then put it back.
I tried to delete it, and it says, and the system won't let me delete it. It says that some other person or some other program is using it.
You may have to make sure you quit all of your running programs, and you probably have to be logged in as the administrator.
Yeah, I always log in as administrator.
Yeah, well, that's a separate problem. Yeah. But, yeah, well, you know you shouldn't. But the thing yeah. is, what you need to do is, I think Steve is right. I think if you reboot your machine and make sure that you know, anything that runs in the background or, you know, down in the lower right corner there.
Even safe boot yeah. might
you
work.
You're right, or boot it up in safe mode.
Oh, okay.
That's probably your best bet, and then that'll give you the ability to delete that thing.
All righty, then.
Okie doke?
Yep, I appreciate it.
Thank you, Mike. Good luck.
All right.
That is one of the interesting problems with digital rights management. If there's any sort of corruption in the system anywhere, you suddenly lose the ability yeah.
and
to play the music you paid for.
Hopefully each program has its own DRM folder, so if he removes the one folder, it doesn't say kill his Windows Media Player video files or doesn't kill his Raxio
media
files.
See, that's why I would be all in favor of at least making a copy of that folder. Rename it something else. Video.
Well,
you know.
That's why I say if he dumps it in the recycle bin and then doesn't empty the trash, you can always right click and restore.
Yeah, that's true.
There's an online comic, and I want to say it was XKCD, but maybe it wasn't. One of the online comics was talking about the difference between digital rights managed software and pirated software. And if you have digital rights managed software and you change anything in your system, or buy a new system, or your machine breaks, you lose the right to play that music. And you lose the ability to play that music. But if you steal your music, mm-hmm. you can put it anywhere anywhere you want. I was going, wait a minute, hold on, that's not the point.
But it is accurate.
It is accurate, yes.
Oops.
Yes.
Well, and that's the whole problem with DRM, is it makes legitimate users who are trying to be legal, it almost forces them to piracy because it's so annoying to have to deal with.
Yep.
You get a new computer and your stuff won't move over. You get a new media player and your stuff. And it closes.
DRM is digital rights management. Right. Basically, it means that it locks the music so that only you can play it and only on certain devices. For example, a lot of Apple Music, you can only play it on up to, what is it, 5 devices, and you pick those 5. So if, for example, you have a Mac and an iPod, and your iPod dies and you want to put it on a new iPod, you have to register that iPod. And you can unregister the old one, so you've still got, you know, you're still only using 2 out of 5 devices. But you have to go through all those machinations in order to do it, whereas...
Now, they have stripped the DRM from the music, but we don't know if they've...
No, they haven't. They sell 2 versions, right?
No, they've gone completely DRM-free.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah. But we don't know if they've removed that 5 device restriction yet, or 5 computer restriction. And now, what was it, the Walmart music store shut down? So all the music you bought at Walmart, you can't use anymore? And the old Zune store is shutting down. So if people who bought the early Zunes, what was the issue? There was the Plays for Sure tag.
Right.
That if you bought a media player, Microsoft had this
Plays for Sure. Right.
When the Zune came out, it didn't support Plays for Sure.
Right.
So Microsoft's media player didn't support Microsoft's own technologies.
Right.
And then, because it's actually a Toshiba player. But now the old Zune store is shutting down, and your old music may not work because the new Zune store is coming online. And
And that's why so many of us think of it not as digital rights management, but as digital restriction management.
Yeah.
They restrict
what we can do with it.
What you can do with it. So, all right, on to our next caller. Our next caller is Alex from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Alex. What's your question?
Hi, guys. Good afternoon. Quick question. I'm looking to get an external hard drive for my iMac, and I was sort of toggling between, well, do I go with the time capsule that they make at 1 terabyte and use that to double up as my router as well, or do I just get their AirPort Express and just get like another third-party external hard drive? I don't know what your experience has been with the time capsule using Time Machine.
Well, that's the basic question. You can use a regular router and a regular hard drive, but then you have two boxes that you have to deal with and manage. The advantage of the time capsule is it's one box. It's your wired router. It's your wireless router. It's your print server. It's your backup hard drive. It's everything in one box, which makes it easy and simple and only one box to deal with. The disadvantage of that is if one piece of it breaks, you lose everything while that's getting repaired.
Right.
Right. Well, that was my question. I wasn't sure if one way was better than the other to go, and so I just was curious about what your experience
is. Depends on how you define better. It's better to have one box to do everything. It's better to have multiple boxes in case one of them fails.
Right.
Well, it's in the same token with the
but
all-in-one printers.
But they both work
and
they're both good, right.
Yeah, yeah. You run into the same problem there, too.
Well, and with the all-in-one printers, it used to be that each piece of the all-in-one wasn't really that good.
Yeah.
But now the all-in-ones have gotten to be so good now that it's and they start at $50. So.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
When one piece of it breaks, you throw it away and buy a new one.
Right.
And actually, when you run out of ink, you throw it away and buy a new printer because it comes with ink.
Right.
But yeah, it's six and one, half a dozen the other. If you already have a wireless router on your network, then you don't need the time capsule. You can just get a hard drive.
And then I just wasn't sure if the time capsule itself was just a better device in all. I'm satisfied with my current router, and now it's just a matter of do I spend, another $500 on a terabyte or the time capsule, or do I spend $200 on a terabyte, Western Digital or something.
One advantage the time capsule does is it puts the hard drive on your network, so all of your devices can back up to it through the network. Although you can hang a hard drive on any one computer and share it to the network.
I bought the LaCie from you.
Well, and that's the third option is a network hard drive. It's a hard drive with an Ethernet port on it that just plugs directly into your network without needing a host computer.
And everybody immediately sees it.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, gentlemen. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks. Thank you very much. It's a tough question and a tough decision, but in all of those cases, if you're using these devices as a backup,
mm-hmm.
you have... beg your pardon. Apparently, I'm allergic to public radio. Here's the thing. If you use these devices as a backup, that's great until a real disaster happens, like your home has a problem, burns down, whatever. There's no backup because it was in the same room. It was in the same place.
Or it gets stolen. Was that Francis Ford Coppola?
Right. Francis Ford Coppola stuff all got stolen. So you want at some point to have an off-site backup. There's 100 ways to do that.
Plenty of services out there.
And for some people, they buy two hard drives and you take one to work. So you always have one hard drive another place.
A lot of people are using Google Mail to do that. You get 7 gigs, for heaven's sake.
Well, there's a company here locally.
Amazon S3.
Right. Amazon's S3. There are a couple local companies that do it. So there's all kinds of ways to do that, but you need to be very careful and make sure that you indeed do it. We have another email question. Let's get to that.
As I said, sort of the bottom line of Apple's time capsule, it's sort of designed for new users just starting out. They need a router, they need a backup, they need wireless, so it's everything in one box. It makes it nice for new users that have nothing already.
Right. And the other thing that I've been going through a lot, too, is the new Buffalo drives. These Buffalo drives that you can just hang, and it's just a network drive that just hangs out there, and they're getting so cheap that folks can just have them out there, and they're using them to back up their data. And like you say, they bring one in, back that current backup, and then take it on home.
Yep. Yeah, a lot of companies make those. The LaCie drive that Nick mentioned earlier, Buffalo, Netgear. Most companies have a network hard drive.
And the beauty is you don't need another keyboard, mouse, huge machine
taking up
space.
It's a little tiny Linux computer inside the hard drive saying serve.
Yeah, right. Yep. Like I say, and it just this one client we've set up for a number of folks, it just says, all right, each night or at the end of the week, back it all up over there. They come in on Monday, they unhook the one drive, put in the next Buffalo drive, take that one home. And once a week, they're doing a full backup. So worst case scenario in their incidents, they're going to maybe lose a week's worth of data. But even the folks there, a lot of them are paranoid that they have jump drives and they're backing up important stuff for them. Like the one lady that does the bookkeeping, she's got another one of those little tiny hard drives that you can literally put in your shirt pocket.
Yep.
And it's like, I think, yep. 15 gig or something.
I have a 6 gig solid state. I have an 8 gig actual little drive.
Yeah.
And now once we get to 3.0, USB 3.0, you'll be moving things over at 5 gigabits a second.
Rip through it like nobody's business.
You fill that 5 gig thing in 8 seconds. Well, let's go to the mail.
Yeah, go ahead.
We have Lori from Methuen, Massachusetts, which I'm probably mispronouncing horribly.
Hey.
I apologize to everyone from Methuen, from everybody in Massachusetts. In fact, on the entire East Coast. I apologize to everybody on the entire East Coast. Hello, I was getting a sound when I received my emails, but now I do not hear it. I have the volume turned on. I hear sounds when I play games on the computer. All right, here's a couple of things, Lori. You don't tell us what your email program is, so we can't give you exact ways to get to it and fix it. But every email program has somewhere in the preferences, in the options, whichever they call it on that particular machine, a section about alerts, and you would be able to set an alert that's visible and an alert that's audible. So your sound would be able to play, and your sometimes the screen flashes or a little thing pops up in the corner or whatever happens there. But you have to set that up. But there's two parts to that, Lori. The first part is setting that up, and the second part is making sure that the sound you're actually trying to play, A, works, and B, is where you said it is. I had a terrible problem with somebody once who had that exact problem. They couldn't get the sound to work. We tried everything. Finally, I went to their house. I mean, they were calling, and I finally went to their house. And I said, well, the file you're trying to play doesn't exist there. Oh, I moved it. Yeah, and you have to tell the machine now to look in the new place. So those are the things to check. First, make sure that you've still got sound turned on. What often happens is when you update, things that you've changed get changed back.
And maybe one of the games she's running made changes to the sound system.
Right. So she needs to be very, very aware that that could happen. And then she's got to make sure that the sound she wants to play, A, works, and B, is where her email program thinks it is. But other than that, you should be on your way. And all of you in Methuen, Massachusetts, that's the way I pronounce it. I don't really care how you like it.
According to Wikipedia, it's Methuen.
Methuen?
Well, I don't know how to pronounce the IPA pronunciation guide they're giving.
Is it a schwa? Then it's Methuen.
Well, it's
an upside down E?
No, it's a backwards E.
Yeah. Oh, backwards, but not upside down?
Right. And then a omega.
Oh, yeah.
we still don't know.
It's me. Yeah, I don't care. We're going to take a break back in just a couple of minutes on member-supported Jazz 90.1 with the greatest computer sound bites.
Computer talk you can understand. More sound bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Already by the late 50s, jazz as a popular black music was losing ground in a major way. It was a natural time to be doing things that sounded, you know, absolutely fresh and conceptually new. Because what did they have to lose?
I'm Josh Jackson. Join us for Jazz, the 59 Sound, an hour of music by Miles Davis, Charles Mingus, and Dave Brubeck.
Monday, June 15th from 6 till 7 p.m. only on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Here's another I Love New York travel tip.
400 years after Henry Hudson first sailed up the river now bearing his name, a grand flotilla of boats starting in New York City will retrace his historic path to Albany during River Week, June 5th through 13th. You're invited to greet the flotilla as it makes stops in towns including Tarrytown, Beacon, Poughkeepsie, Kingston, Catskill, and Castleton. The flagships include the famous Onrust, Clearwater, Woody Guthrie, Mystic, and Half Moon. To celebrate, there will be activities for everyone along the river, at boat and yacht clubs, cultural institutions, and museums. To learn more about River Week and New York's quadricentennial celebrations, visit the I Love New York website at iloveny.com. Our rich heritage. Another reason I love New York.
Hi, this is Charles Benoit. Join me and the entire Smart Set tonight from 5 to 6 right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And you are listening to Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Give us a call if you're in the 585 area code. It's 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, outside the 585 area code, it's toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. That's 1-800-790-0415. And we will be taking your calls any minute now. But before we do, brace yourselves, folks. I know this is going to come as a blow to so very, very many of you. Microsoft plans to stop offering Microsoft Money Plus. It's personal financial software.
Did they still? I didn't know they were still making it.
First launched 17 years ago. This has been an unsuccessful product for 17 years. Microsoft is nothing if not tenacious. It joins Encarta in the trash can with other products the company's discontinued. In 2009, with banks, brokerage firms, and websites now providing a range of options for managing personal finances, the consumer need for Microsoft Money Plus has changed, Microsoft said in a statement. We will no longer offer Microsoft Money Plus for purchase after June 30th, 2009. Demand for a comprehensive personal finance tool set has declined, Microsoft added elsewhere on the Money Plus site. Of course, in this particular case, declined is a very short slope, as not many people ever demanded the Microsoft personal finance tool.
Because there are much better ones from other companies.
And here's the other problem. This is another one of those things where Microsoft put out 50 different versions. So how do you even know which one you want? The products affected are Microsoft Money Essentials, Microsoft Money Plus Deluxe, Microsoft Money Plus Premium, and Microsoft Money Plus Home and Business.
And most folks use QuickBooks.
In their place, Microsoft, of course, is choosing to concentrate resources on its MSN Money website, which you probably also didn't know they had, which does offer personal finance information along with market news. If you are an active customer, both of you listening, you'll be supported through at least January 2011, so you can continue to receive yearly tax updates. After that point, however, users will need to manually update the tax rates or just switch to Quicken and be done with it.
So that was another one of those programs that often got bundled with Windows PCs.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But in this case, it didn't work.
Yeah, it didn't. No, it didn't. Nobody bought it. Nobody used it.
You know what? They should almost start it up on the forums. We start taking bets on how long Microsoft, because, you know, here they're dumping this. Now they're taking out antivirus software. We could actually have a two-part question. One, how fast will somebody get infected because Microsoft doesn't get around to updating bad enough and it causes some horrific...
You can't update your antivirus once a month. You can't do it.
And how long will it last on the market before it's Microsoft says we're no longer continuing the support for Microsoft antivirus?
And how long will it be before somebody finds a hole in Microsoft antivirus?
Duh. Big deal.
You know that it's already a target. People are already ramping up their
probably
little
first beta
compilers.
Will have
so I got confused because Windows Defender is already Microsoft's antivirus, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
So what's this new program?
Well, no, apparently Microsoft Windows Defender will be going away.
Well, no, Defender was sort of Quasimodo pretend to be protecting your machine. I think any second grade grader... hacker could hack into that thing.
Yeah, many of us were calling it Microsoft Pretender.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Encarta, which was Microsoft's encyclopedia software, is also shutting down after 16 years. Let's face it, why would you buy Encarta Premium for $29.95 when Wikipedia
is free
and about a zillion times more extensive, although not a whole lot more accurate.
And a lot of these programs all came out in the days before internet.
Right.
And I think Encarta was one of the first programs to ship on a DVD instead of 20 CDs. And that was how you got your encyclopedia. Of course, when I was a kid, and probably you guys too, your dad bought Encyclopedia Britannica.
I had a set of the Encyclopedia Britannicas, and I loved them.
We had the junior Encyclopedia Britannica, and then the annual updates.
If you had the Encyclopedia Britannica, they would write reports for you.
Oh, really?
They would do your homework.
See, I had to haul my butt
Down
you
to
could
the
write
library.
To them.
The
people
couldn't
write,
afford it.
They would write. I forget what they called it, but essentially, they wrote your papers for you. I called up one time because there was a number in the beginning in front of the book. You could call them up. It's an 800 number, and you could call them up and ask about something. And I was doing
my
a
dad
report.
My parents must have hid that number from us.
You never read the encyclopedia cover to cover. I did. And so I called this number, and I said, look, I'm doing a report on NASA. I remember this definitely. And I said, I need all the information I can get. How do I? Because it said call us for information. They said, oh, we'll send you some information. How long is your paper, by the way? I said, well, it's a 5-page paper. I said, okay. 2 days later, in express mail, okay, I got a 5-page paper on NASA.
Oh, jeez.
That's like the...
Now, unfortunately, my parents, and I blame them, they raised me right, so I didn't just turn it in, okay? Mm-hmm. I used all the information mm-hmm. and rewrote it. But they did my homework for me, and I thought... Oh, man.
It's like that Rodney Dangerfield movie, Easy yeah. Money, where he gets NASA to write the space story. He gets Kurt Vonnegut to write the report on Kurt Vonnegut. And then the teacher, Sally Kellerman, gives him an F. Whoever wrote this didn't know the first thing about Kurt Vonnegut. Yep. It was Kurt Vonnegut.
Yep. Well, there's a probably apocryphal story about that, too. Kurt Vonnegut heard that there was somebody teaching his works. So he came in to sit in the lecture, and he's sitting in the back, and he's, it's one of those huge lecture halls, 200 students, and he's just laughing his head off. Finally, the teacher gets really angry and says, what is wrong with you? And he said, and he stands up and says, you don't have the first idea what these books are about. He says, how would you know? And he goes, well, I'm Kurt Vonnegut. So, of course, the guy goes, well, why don't you come down and tell us? So he comes down, he starts holding up his books. He says, yeah, this one, I wrote this one for money. This one, I wrote for money. This one... I wrote for money. I know we're a computer show. I don't care. Shut up and listen. Vincent
it's
Price.
Our show. We can do what we're
right.
talking about.
Vincent Price came to Nazareth College where I was, and he gave a talk one day, and then he came downstairs and chatted with us afterwards. And we were talking about, why he was an actor and what he did. And he said, I'm in it strictly for the money. He said, I buy paintings. He said, I look around my house and I say, oh, yes, that painting was the Raven. That painting was The Pit and the Pendulum. That says they're crappy movies, but I don't care because this is how I buy my artwork. He had a great story. He was on tour with this one-man show, right? And he's in this little podunk town in the middle of nowhere, and there's nothing to do the day before his thing. He's walking around this little town, and he actually sees a double feature, The Pit and the Pendulum and The Worm, Ouroboros. Both of his horror movies, right? So he goes and he sits. The movie's already started, so he comes in the dark and he sits down. And he said, there were these two young teenage girls sitting in front of me screaming and giggling and grabbing each other and holding. And he got this really mischievous look on his face, and he said, I couldn't help myself. He said, when the lights came up, I put my hands on their shoulders, leaned between them, and says, did you enjoy the movies, girls? One of them screamed and ran out. The other fainted dead away.
Because he was never big on makeup either. It was always his face.
That's right.
Yep.
That's right.
The latest Dog Ate My Homework, going back to encyclopedias a minute, the Dog Ate My Homework excuse has gone high-tech now. You can now buy a corrupted file.
Nice.
So instead of the Dog Ate My Homework, so teachers are not saying, well, email it to me. So you email the teacher a corrupted file.
Nice. Oh, nice. I accept that as a teacher, I say if the file got corrupted, it's your fault. It's your problem.
Yeah.
If I need it, to send it in early and verify that I got it and could open it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. I found this on a website. 10 cool things about the iPhone 3GS.
Okay.
It's faster. And it is. The 3G isn't really a slouch, but it's a little sluggish when it's opening and closing applications. Even Mac people are willing to say that now that the 3GS is out.
Oh,
and S stands
before
for
it
what?
Wasn't, though.
Yeah, I saw that the other day. What's the S stand for? Super?
Speedy?
Speed,
yeah.
3G speed. It does have more memory. There's the 16 gig and the 32 gigabyte. The three original iPhones were 4, 8, and 16. So now it's 16 and 32.
They should have gotten little Speedy Gonzales.
The 8 gig model is down to
$99.
Since they
can't use Roadrunner, they could use Speedy Gonzales.
Now, what about the iTouch?
That's the big question. A new iPhone implies there's a new iPod Touch coming. What Apple has traditionally done is iPods get released around September for the holiday season. So we don't know, but that's a pretty good bet.
See, a $99 iTouch, I might could get behind.
Well, see, the problem there is that's the subsidized price. You are committing to a $2,000 contract with AT&T, so they sell you the phone for $99.
Right.
What's happening now, and there's big furor over the on the net, and people are petitioning AT&T. If you recently bought an iPhone 3G and you're fairly new into your two-year contract, if you want to upgrade to the new 3GS, you pay full price, $600 for the phone. Because you're into your contract. Now, if you only have a couple of months left on your contract, then it's maybe $100 to buy the new one. So that's that $2,000 contract, and it's very annoying.
A phone is a phone. That's all I need it for.
Yeah. Right. No,
and that's typical of any smartphone, not just the iPhone.
Yeah. The iPod Touch would be interesting because it does most of what the cool things that an iPhone does, right, except for the phone.
Without the $100 a month bill.
Without the $100 a month bill, and it does Wi-Fi.
And it does Skype
and
over Wi-Fi.
Skype. Right. This shocked me. The new iPhone 3GS does video recording. I did not realize you couldn't do video recording with an iPhone.
Yeah, it was just
what
a still camera. It was a fairly low-quality, fixed-focused still camera. And that upset a lot of people. So that video was a very common rumor.
And of course, it's an improved camera. The old iPhone 3G was a 2 megapixel camera. The new is a 3. And of course, you can talk to it now. So you need never be lonely again. Your iPod will.
That was also a big point of contention on the early models. Is there's no voice control and no audio feedback. So the deaf community cannot use it. And we figured there'd be an ADA lawsuit against them.
No, the deaf community couldn't use it with the blind community.
Blind, yeah, that's
the blind,
what I meant. Yeah.
Yes.
Sorry.
Here's really, this is why it's worth buying. It's got a compass.
Yeah.
I don't know what the point of that is, but hey, it's got a compass.
Turn by turn directions on your GPS.
Well, I still don't get it.
Turn by turn directions or turn left. No compass I've ever seen says left. For Pete's sake.
Well, it's right up there with that bottle. It's got a bottle on it. You turn the bottle.
Yeah, you pour the bottle out.
Right. It's like,
now, they interact with other iPods, so you can pour the liquid from one iPod to another iPod.
Here's the thing that I could almost buy one for.
They scare me.
The bubble popping.
I've got that online.
That would almost work for me. It's not tactile, but at least it sounds right.
Well, Judine used to love putting the bubble wrap down on the floor. And then running her chair across it.
Used
to drive my dog nuts.
Yeah, I bet.
Sit there and she, barking all over. We'd just go back and forth.
When I was a kid, I'd take a roll of caps into the garage and hit it with a hammer.
Sure.
My mother would come running.
Yes. It does do internet tethering. I like that.
Except on AT&T.
AT&T
promises it'll have that feature available by fall.
And then they're touting new headphones like anybody uses the original headphones ever. All right, that music tells me that sadly, but maybe not a moment too soon, we've reached the end of another show. I want to thank everybody who called in. You know the numbers by now. They're on our website and everything else. So thank you all very much. I want to thank especially Mr. Rob Linton. Rob Linton, ladies and gentlemen. Who has graciously consented to put us on his station, and knowing full well what we were like. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. We will be back next week at noon on member-supported Jazz 90.1 with the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites. Thanks for listening.
Pianist, composer, singer, and actress Anne Hampton Calloway is sitting in.
I got to sing on the soundtrack of Queen Latifah.